Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dare to Design podcast with me, Karen Hilsinger, a graphic design student just trying to figure it out. Join me as I learn more about the industry and interview designers of all backgrounds, getting a look into what the life of a graphic designer is really like. In today's episode, I chat with Emma McGoldrick. Emma is the founder and creative director of ESM Creative Studio, a full-service studio based in New York City. Being a self-taught designer, she shares her story from starting college in the field of science, then to marketing, and then finding design as a hobby. She shares how she built her studio and how she manages her clients, while also sharing her struggles with imposter syndrome and self-doubt. This is a really great episode that I think a lot of you will be able to relate to, so stay tuned. Hi, Emma. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I think we'll just get started with like a quick introduction, asking you icebreaker, spitfire questions, your name, age, where you're from, where you're located, all that jazz.
Okay. Yeah. So I am Emma McGoldrick. I am 23 years old. I live in New York City, but I'm currently home in South Carolina due to COVID. And I went to the University of South Carolina, and I founded ESM Creative Studio while in college and pursued it fully after school.
Nice. So what did you major in college?
So I started out in college actually is a biomedical engineering major. Wow. So I thought I wanted to go to med school and go a totally different route. And I had a mid-college crisis of changing my major. So I actually went into the business school. So I majored in marketing and management. And then I actually have a minor in biology because of my first year and a half, 2 years as a biomedical engineering major. So I have that little minor in there as a fun fact.
That's awesome. So for design, were you mostly self-taught post-college or?
Yeah, so I'm fully self-taught through design, and I started just kind of on the side. It was just more of like a passion project, and it was fun. It still is fun, but it started out as a passion project, and I started doing it for, you know, my clubs at school and for, you know, like other little, you know, projects
and stuff like that.
Yeah, family, friends, things like that. And my first like quote unquote client was my yoga teacher in college, and I actually bartered yoga for design. And that was a great way to start, and I always tell people to start local and to start with people you know, because I was able to practice kind of with her and kind of teach myself a lot of different practices and a lot of different you know, skills and techniques and things I needed. And you know, I'm still learning today and always Googling and
gotta love Google.
Yeah, always love Google and YouTube videos and all that that fun stuff.
So with your freelancing journey, with a background in marketing, what made you want to enter the design industry? Like, did you have the, okay, I'm going to get a corporate job, I'm going to move to the city, and then all of a sudden you were like, oh, I could do this, like the design?
That's exactly how I was doing design just in college, just like extra spending money and kind of to help pay for school and stuff like that. And I was doing it more just as, you know, the side hustle type of thing, but also just like for fun and a hobby. And then I had a full intention of, I applied for jobs. I knew I wanted to move to New York City. I was applying for, I had internships in marketing, and I had internships in like communication and like slash marketing jobs. A lot of, you know, smaller companies kind of combine those roles. So I did, that was a lot of my internships were combining those two things. So I was applying to all sorts of like, you know, intro to marketing, jobs and, influencer marketing and, you know, communications, you know, specialists or things like that. And that's, I had full intention. I actually got a couple of job offers. And once it came around to getting the initial offer, like salary wise, I was like, you know, I'm only doing this design thing a couple hours a week on the side, but I'm making a pretty good bit of money doing it. And I kind of crunched the numbers, and I had a lot of cheerleaders like telling me that I could do it, like my family and friends and stuff like that. It took a lot of convincing on my part of convincing myself and kind of the way I talked to myself about doing it. But yeah, it was more just having the realization that I could make the same salary right out of college doing design than I was getting offered for these jobs.
That's great. You know, yeah. I think a lot of designers think that they're like, because you're always told like the age old belief of like, artists don't make money, like you're going to be living paycheck to paycheck. But I think social media now has also totally changed the freelancing game. You can connect to people from Australia to like Hawaii and you don't even have to go.
No, it's so true. And exactly what you said of that's kind of what made me want to go to med school in the beginning is I was always like an artist. My mom's an artist and I was always a pretty artistic person. And I didn't want to go that route because I feel like I wasn't going to make enough money. And they always, you know, the starving artist, you know, thing that's fed into your, my parents were very supportive. It wasn't necessarily them at all. It was more like society, you know, always like in school and stuff. They're always like, oh no, you have to be a doctor, a lawyer, like to make, you know, any kind of money. And so that's kind of, both my parents aren't like any of those things. And they weren't, you know, didn't really pressure me at all to go into that path, but I kind of found it in my own way. So I think that's so true that it is kind of up to you to figure out that you can make money in a lot of different avenues, and social media really is a big part of it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's always about money. And I think that's what we're ingrained in society. It's like, you know, go to school, go in debt, then find a job, then have kids. And then you're like still in debt because you have a mortgage. And it's just like, it's
6 years later, still paying off college.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. That's like another tangent in and of itself. But so when did you start freelancing specifically? Like how late after you graduated?
I was actually a sophomore in college when I was like doing a lot. I was doing, so that yoga teacher was like my first client, but then she was really involved in the community where I was in my college town. So she, a lot of her friends started hiring me to make like posters, or like she had a lot of friends had like younger kids. So I was being hired to make like party invitations and like very random things like that. And I have this kind of more colorful, I have a very like child appropriate style. So it was a lot of that kind of thing. Yeah, so that's kind of when I started freelancing. And then out of college, so I graduated college and I came home to like, I have two younger siblings. So I wanted to spend some time with them before I moved to New York City because they're in South Carolina. So I came home for like 3 months and then I moved to the city and I started freelancing while I was home. I kind of did it not 40 hours a week because I wanted to spend time with my family and spend time, you know, I live on the beach. So we wanted to like, just have like a little bit of a summer before I went full force into working. But yeah, once I moved to the city, I was, you know, 40, well, it never really is 40 hours a week when you work for yourself. It's more like 50 to 60 or, you know,
I was gonna say about 24/7 maybe.
24/7. Yeah. So, but I say like, you know, typical 9 to 5, I was working when I moved to the city. And I was just working out of my apartment for about a month. And then I joined a co-working space a month into that. So about August of last year, I joined a co-working space, which was like the best decision I ever made because it made me feel like I was going to an office and it gave me coworkers and it gave me people to like
even a social if we weren't working life.
A social aspect, which really helped me, you know, with the, you get kind of lonely working for yourself. So that was a great resource.
I think it was Corona too. We're all realizing that. And it's even like, you know, maybe I don't want even the corporate job because you're still, you may be seeing people, but you're doing the same thing every day. So with freelancing, you kind of have that freedom.
It is. It's so nice to do something different every day and week to week.
So you started ESM Creative in South Carolina, like before you came to New York?
Yeah. So I named my Instagram back in like, it was originally just like my Instagram account because I was making all these graphics and stuff and I can't remember if it was my mom or my boyfriend or a friend, but someone was like, you should just put it on Instagram. Like I've seen other people putting their designs on Instagram. Like, cause I didn't want to, I couldn't afford a website at that point. I couldn't afford like make a portfolio or anything like that. I was like, so I just put it on Instagram cause it was free. And, I named it ESM Creative because, I don't think I've ever talked about this, but my mom's initials are ESM. And then my initials are also ESM. And we used to make cards and art together growing up and we'd always sign it ESM squared.
Oh, that's so adorable.
Yeah. So at first my Instagram was ESM2.creative. Mm-hmm. And I thought that ESM2.creative kind of sounded a little less professional because you couldn't really, it wasn't ESM squared, like on, you couldn't really see that, that's what it was on Instagram. So I changed to ESM creative like probably 2 months in, but yeah, that's kind of where I got my name from. It's not just like, there's a, you know, a meaning behind the, it's not just my initials. It had a little bit more meaning behind it. And that's, yeah, it's, but yeah, so I started my Instagram and that's, yeah, that's kind of the timeline of that.
That's great. So how did you build your brand in that time and then gaining clients?
So at first it was more just word of mouth, and it was pretty powerful word of mouth just locally. Mm-hmm. And then in October, I believe it was, of my senior year of college, I had been listening to podcasts pretty regularly. Like I was, before, I'd like to say before I was, before podcasts were cool, I was listening to them. So I knew the industry really, really well. And I joined like a couple Facebook pages of podcasts and kind of knew what other podcasts were doing. And Brooke and Danielle behind Gals on the Go put out Gals on the Go, and they were like, hey, we're looking for someone to do our cover art. And I was like, because I was a marketing student, I sent them like a marketing plan of like, hey, I want to do your cover, but also I think I could help you with this, this, and this, because these other podcasts are doing this stuff. And like, mm-hmm. you know, you have a ability to like create a community and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. So yeah, so then they brought me on as their creative director. And because they had a pretty big following within their podcast, I gained a good bit of word of mouth from that. And that really helped me get a lot of clients at that point.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember when they put out that story and they were like, we need like a designer. And I was a freshman at the time, I think. And I was like, maybe someone else can. So it's so great that, and you always, that's what my one professor my freshman year always said. It's like, if someone asks for one proof, give them three, you know, always give them more than they're asking for. So then they know that you have a lot to offer. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. Yeah.
I think it's also a big part of it. I know in college and even after college, I learned this, that I was always really involved and I had a lot of great opportunities in college. And I think a big part of it is just showing up to events and showing up to places. And you think like, oh, like a lot of people are going to, you know, show up to that, or a lot of people are going to want to do that. And you'd be surprised by how many people don't show up in physically show up, but also like, virtually show up to things. Mm-hmm. And like, commit, you know, a lot of people don't honor commitments. Like, and now I think a big thing with it is like everything that's gone virtual, like virtual meetups and virtual happy hours and things like mm-hmm. that. I think it's hard to, personally, it's hard to like stick to a schedule. I find more when I'm just at home all day rather than, which it should be easier. But no, I think that exactly what you said, just giving more than what you think is enough can sometimes be helpful, especially when trying to gain, you know, and you know, clients and followers and things like that.
So that segues perfect to the next series of questions I wanted to ask you about, which was, I went on your website and I found the services you offer. So I saw that you have an a la carte section on your website, and that's really interesting to me. On there, you show that you also offer services from content creation to illustrations, digital marketing elements, and more. And a lot of designers pigeonhole themselves into a certain category. So what made you want to offer these rather than just starting out and operating as a branding or web design agency?
I think for me, it was mainly because I didn't go to school for design. Mm-hmm. I didn't take classes to kind of figure out like where, you know, what I loved the most. And I definitely have areas of design that I love better than others. Mm-hmm. But for me, I love like branding, but I also love the illustration. And then I also studied marketing at school and had several pretty high level marketing internships and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I have a good understanding and can help. I love working. My main clients are small women owned businesses. And so mm-hmm. I think by having a lot of services, I'm able to help them in like a lot of different ways. And I've added to that list as I've learned, like I've taught myself things and learned from videos and things like that. So I think that having, you know, different services allows me to kind of be open to a lot of different opportunities by different people. And a lot of people, most people start out with branding with me and then like do a la carte options as add-ons. The only like a la carte option that I really do like on its own is like the illustration piece of like either podcast covers or like they use it for, you know, different things on social or a profile picture, things like that. But yeah, I mainly do a la carte options as like add-ons.
That's really interesting how you, you know, have the packages and then their add-ons. A lot of people also don't know what they want because I think we forget that we're not, I don't want to say like I'm an expert, but we're the ones that have the more experience in it with branding and then with your marketing background. Some people may not know that they need this website or a portfolio or that, you know, a podcast cover is pretty important to then match your Instagram stories and everything like that. So it's, I guess, building that brand, and some people don't know what they want or what they need. So seeing it all listed out, I think was very smart because then it shows them, oh, I need that. I need that. Oh, that would be nice. You know, going through the list and visually seeing it. And then you have examples on your Instagram. So I'm definitely going to remember that for when I'm building a future website, just make it as easy for people as possible, you know?
It does really help. And also going into exactly what you said of people don't, I have a lot of people that reach out and are like, hey, can I just have a logo? And I don't do like just quote unquote, just logos. Like I think a big part of it is that like your brand isn't just like a visualization. It's also, there's like a lot of strategy goes into your brand and like who your target client is and things like that. And I, part of how figuring that out is I do, you know, some market research into my branding suites, but then I also have them fill out a pretty in-depth questionnaire that helps me see kind of what their goals for like the next, you know, 6 months are, the next 5 years are, like what they really want to create with their brand. But with that, a logo isn't just like a, you know, if your brand is called, bubbly, like it's, but the word bubbly isn't just the brand, like it's the colors and the packaging and the, you know, the emotion that it invokes and things like that. So with those packages, it kind of helps with the a la carte options as items because people can kind of really curate to what they need for their brand.
Yeah. And graphic design, you know, a lot of people think it's just, let's make this pretty, but it is visual communication. And before graphic design, like think about everything that you see from a poster to a website, everything is designed and everything has a purpose. So I think that is something also that you give to the table with your marketing background. And I also have a digital marketing minor and an advertising minor so that then I would be more marketable. How many times can I say marketing? So I could be more marketable to employers or future clients, whoever it may be. So did this, like the a la carte options, was that overwhelming to you? Or did you think it was more of like, as long as I get clients who choose from these things, like I'll be good?
I think most, the thing with the a la carte options is I have them listed on my website. I think most designers do those things. Mm-hmm. I just happen to have them like listed on my site and like advertise them. But I think if you go to most design, even like, I mean, maybe not like a very, like, you know, again, I work with really smaller, you know, boutique-y kind of women-owned businesses. So I'm not working with like, I'm not doing huge branding packages like like a branding studio might. So I think with like a branding studio, if you ask them to do like an illustration, they would be like, no, sorry. But for, I think a lot of designers that are kind of doing similar things to what I'm doing offer a lot of options. And I think for what I was, when I was making my list of, you know, services and things like that, those are all things that I enjoy creating. So I think that's kind of why it's not very overwhelming. And a lot of people kind of have a good understanding of what they, like they add things on, but like you were saying, like they don't know what they need. But I think a lot of people, when they come, they have a good understanding of what they want. I think also having those options listed out, I've received emails from people interested in items because they saw it on that list. Especially like I do branding consultations, which for like what those are, they're not you know, it's, again, I'm a 23-year-old. I've had, you know, a good bit of experience and I work myself and I've created a successful business plan, but by no means am I an expert of any kind. But those are just more open conversations between me and another business owner talking about, like, you know, my experience and how, what my small knowledge can, like, help them growing their business or Instagram strategy or, like, how to implement hashtags or, you know, different, like, those are very, like, custom. So most of my options are, like, really customized to the person. So I think that's why they work and why they're not that overwhelming to me.
No, that's great. Like, you've thought it out very well and you have an intention behind everything that you do. So that's a very successful business plan. And I also want to talk to you about the direction and strategy services that you offer on your website. So some examples are one-to-one brand consultation sessions, like you just mentioned, brand auditing, audience identification, mission and values, and then so on. So with this being said, when you were starting ESM Creative, were you thinking of it more as, okay, I can use my marketing knowledge to then go into design? And then you started, like, okay, you started thinking from a marketing perspective to then adding design into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly, yeah, I think that when I started doing design, I didn't necessarily think of it as a bridge to marketing. I kind of just thought of it, I was, again, just kind of doing it as, like, a hobby. But the more I studied marketing, and my senior thesis was with Lionsgate out of LA. And so we, like, went to LA and we did, like, whole project from start to finish with them. And with that, I did a lot of the design pieces for the project. And I think that seeing that really helped me see how much of my marketing knowledge I could implement into my business. Mm-hmm. And I think with, again, all those things that you, like, that you just listed are kind of all fall under a consultation, because it's, mm-hmm. we discuss them over the phone, but all my consultations, how it usually works is if someone schedules a consultation with me, it's before we do branding. It's because they want to, like, hash out some details about, you know, what the naming of their brand, and if it's, like, the right direction, or, like, a lot of, for me, an example is, like, my website's emmamcgoldrick.com, and then mm-hmm. you find ESM Creative on my, on my website. And the reason I chose to position myself that way is because if I want to create another brand or another element, like Golden Hour Guild or things like that, I can mm-hmm. all have it underneath the brand of Emma McGoldrick. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of clients that are kind of on the similar boat as that. They're not doing branding, but they're doing, you know, if they're a nutritionist and they want to brand it under their name, but they want to have another name for their nutrition. Like, mm-hmm. do they brand the website? You know, that kind of thing. And those are, you know, all those kind of things are what we discuss in consultations. And that also, it's my marketing background, but it's also just my personal experience and knowledge and the people I've worked with and, you know, kind of the industry itself that I've been able to see. And that's how I just, you know, it's, I found that people were asking for it. And that's actually a lot of my a la carte options and a lot of things I've added, like these brands consultations, have been people have either, like, DM'd me or emailed me asking, like, oh, hi, like, I'd love to, you know, talk to you about my business. Like, I'd pay you an hourly rate. Like, what can I do for this? And so it was an initial email that actually, you know, was like, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should offer this as a, you know, service. So yeah, and that's the same thing. I've had a lot of people reach out to me asking me to, like, do, like lessons. And I don't know if I'd ever, I'd love to teach, like, lessons, but mm-hmm. I don't know, like, I don't feel that's kind of where that imposter syndrome comes in. And I'm like, I'm not, like, I don't know if I'm good enough to teach lessons, but yeah, I think that's kind of where the consultations came from.
Yeah, that's great. The more experience you have too, I feel like teaching will be just something more natural.
Yeah, that's very true.
So much to do at once that could be, like, maybe 10 years down the line, you could offer ebooks or something of that sort. So
yeah, that's also the thing with, like, teaching or doing anything that's, like, not directly working with clients is your time is your money. And so, like, if I'm not spending my time working directly for a client that's paying me, if I'm working mm-hmm. for my, you know, quote, myself, I am not paying myself. So it's, like, a hard median to find. I know it's a point, you have to find a point where you are making enough that you can, you know, take time to pay your, and I do that, you know, I have to do that a lot, you know, with owning your own business, you do have to do a lot of time where you're not being, you know, on the clock, technically, you know, you're on your own.
Emails and
emails
and the grunt work, I guess.
Yeah, all the grunt work. Yeah. And there's a lot of fun grunt work, like, you know, my own content planning and my own, you know, creating items for my shop and like those type of things. Which, you know, that's, it's a tricky balance to figure out, that I'm still, you know, in the process of perfecting.
Now I'm going to move into your, I guess, talking about how you look at design. So what is your design process? I guess coming from a more marketing background, I'm very interested to see how you start a project and then how you get to the finished product.
Yeah, so usually a client will either email me or DM me, and I ask them to email me just because then I'm on the email chain. And then we set up an initial call and we talk about kind of what they're looking for in their brand. And that's when we kind of figure out which package options and which a la carte items, or if they're doing a podcast, if they want to do like just the cover, if they want to do a full branding, you know, for the podcast, mm-hmm. or different things like that. So after initial call, then we set up kind of like my onboarding part of the process, which I send a welcome guide, which has like, it's like a 10-page PDF guide about me and about like how to communicate in my office hours. And it has a vendor list for if they need like packaging or if they need like social media. I don't do a ton of social media management. So I have like some mm-hmm. people on there. I have like a PR agency that I work with. If they need like influencer marketing and different things like that, that I work with some clients on some of those things on like a pretty, like a very like client by client basis. But for the most part, I outsource a lot of that stuff. So that's kind of on the welcome guide, and also just some information about like the steps for them. And I also like, you know, I always say like, if you know, we do most of our communication over email, but if you ever feel the need to call me, because with design, it really is hard sometimes to convey changes over an email. So mm-hmm. I make sure that it's very clear that I have like an open communication line. But yeah, and then also part of the onboarding is a deposit and a contract and all the nitty gritty. And then I send them the brand questionnaire. And then I send them like also instructions to create a Pinterest board, which I think if you just tell a client to create a Pinterest board, you'll get some, you know, some wild stuff. So I send like a pretty, you know, kind of like a detailed instructions on creating a Pinterest board. And then I also create my own Pinterest board after I get back the brand questionnaire. So kind of things that I envision for their brand. And this could be not necessarily design elements, but also just like, say that it's a product, a brand that's creating a product, and down the road they want to expand to like 3 more products. So mm-hmm. the brand also has to convey, it can't just revolve around this single product. It has to be, you know, fit to like future products and things like that. But then I also do some market research into like what other brands in their industry are doing and kind of what other things, to make sure, you know, we're not having similar colors or, you know, it's very unique. And like, it also, you know, who their audiences are and who my clients' audience are and like what, you know, different things like that. And then we actually start into the design process, and, you know, it's kind of the same as mood board, and then into like a color palette. And so also this is my process for like a branding suite. So
okay.
Kind of different for other items, but yeah. So then I do like a one method. So a lot of brand designers, what they'll do is if they get a brand, they'll create like 3 or 4 completely different branding options for mm-hmm. the client. So what I do is I create a general mood and a general color palette. So it could have like 8 colors, and we actually only use like 4 of those colors. Mm-hmm. And then I create, depending on the package they choose, is the amount of concepts they get. So I then create the concepts that are all very, very different, but they all kind of convey the same, because the colors and the mood, I think, and like the general knowledge behind the brand, you know, of who their audience is, like what colors like work, you know, convey what we're trying to convey and things like that. I think it's hard for a client to choose from so many options that are like so different. So with this, and I've all gotten a lot of feedback that clients really enjoy, and clients that have had, like they're on like their 3rd brand or something, and they've worked mm-hmm. with other designers that have done like a multiple concept route, that this is a lot better because they're able to really like define and like, or it's not refine like kind of what they're thinking of in their mind. And
yeah,
I've gotten some really good feedback, but yeah, that's kind of my method. And then from there we go into like you know, edits and then prototypes and, you know, all like the, you know, mock-ups and all the different kinds of logos and then collateral and then, you know, all that kind of stuff, down to payment. And then, you know, if they do web design, then we start the process all over again. But yeah, so just, yeah, kind of, that's kind of that process. And for me, I take a lot of photos, like every, like when I go on walks and when I, you know, in the city, I took a lot more photos than I do here. But for me, I think my surroundings and also just like, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I read a lot of books and, I follow like a lot of design newsletters and magazines and things like that. That's kind of where I get a lot of inspiration from. But mostly just the things around me and, listening and thinking and my, that makes sense.
No, yeah, it totally does.
Yeah. That's kind of the process. I know that's the process just for like the design, designing a branding suite, but you know, for other things, it's, you know, for a podcast, everything starts basically with a call and discussing, you know, face to face with a client, what they're looking for. And, you know, I always start out by asking like, what is their passion behind starting whatever they're starting, whether it be a podcast, a brand, if they're looking to just, you know, ask about, you know, whatever it is. I think that's the really important part behind why someone's starting something.
So you mentioned web design and then like starting all over. I'm actually a print concentration. So but I want to venture into design. Like I'm taking some web design courses next semester. Do you have any advice for different softwares you use, or if you use like more of a Wix or Squarespace type of deal, like how did you get into web design? Cause it's so different from illustration. Yeah,
no, it's a wild world. So I do Squarespace, and I always, you know, I always, when I'm pitching myself to clients about web design, I always say I'm a web designer and not a web developer. So this isn't developing. This is like me, this is a designing like a pretty page. It's not, you know, and that's also why my prices aren't what a web developer slash designer's prices would be. But so I do mostly, I've done a couple of sites where I like edited Wix sites and things like that, which included a lot of Googling and things like that. But for the most part, most of my clients that I'm doing a full web design for are starting from scratch. So I recommend Squarespace, which I've used a couple other platforms, and Squarespace to me is just, it's the cleanest. It's the easiest to add custom code into, to add. It's also the easiest when you turn it over to the client. It's so easy to send them videos done by Squarespace that show how to edit things. Or
I
also
wondered like how that works. Yeah. Like once you finish it and you give it to the client, what do they do with it? How does that, you're like, I don't know what to do with this. Like how does that work? Like you just give them like the password or like you share it with them?
Yeah, so I share, transfer ownership to them.
Okay.
And then also a big part of it is either, it depends on the client, but it's recording like where I talk and like record my screen, like a walkthrough through the website and like how to change things and how to write a blog post or how to, you know, add a news article into a section or things like that. I send them that most of the time, but also some clients that aren't editing the site as much, I could just send them, like the Squarespace has done a really good job of making like tutorials. Like they have a great overview tutorial and things like that, that once your site's set up, that's kind of all you need to know. If it's a kind of a standard site where they're not, you know, adding blog posts or adding photos or anything, it's kind of just like a landing page, you know, kind of thing. Or people are like, you know, going there to contact you. So it just depends on the client. It's really specific to them, but yeah, it is, it's kind of it's one of those things you kind of just have to figure out, like that I had to figure out like the turnover process. Now I'm not saying web design, like web design is, I think for me, I did a lot of, I watched a course. I can't remember who did it, but it was a Squarespace design course. And then, I did my site, and that was kind of my, I taught myself like as I did my site. Type of thing. But yeah, and I think, it's just kind of a trial and error. I know that kind of sounds great, but yeah, with that. But I think definitely making sure that like, you know, people, when I talk to people about it, that I'm a web designer and not a developer is a big part of it. But that's mostly what my clients are looking for. They're looking for, you know, not a super customized site, just like a very pretty
resource.
Like, yeah, and easy to use for them and their clients.
That's great. I gained a lot of insight from that. I made my website using Wix.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot about Squarespace. And when I use Wix, there's like two different editors. So I was using the editor where you can like make everything from scratch and like upload fonts and everything. But then it just got so crazy that I was like, you know what? We're starting over. And then I just completely scrapped it and started over because I needed a fresh start, I guess.
Yeah, web design is probably my least favorite aspect of, you know, what I do. But I do also love doing it with clients. I've done their branding and have like patterns done for them and things like that. I think it's so fun to see the work that you've created. And like, you know, I put it into a branding guide to send my clients, but you send them these logo files and you're like, good luck. Like, can't wait to see what you put on the website. It's really fun to kind of see them all in one place.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So going forward, talking about the Gals on the Go podcast, we mentioned that briefly. Is there anything else you would like to add about that? Maybe being more of a creative director and how you found that, especially since you were self-taught, were you like, oh, can I do this? Or were you just like, well, if they think I can do it, I'm going to do it.
No, they definitely believed in me. Again, like that was when I was first starting out. And I think they definitely believed in me. And that's kind of what gave me confidence to do a lot of it. But for most of what I do for them, you know, it kind of is a wide variety of things. But for them, they're like my only client that I do constant like social media management for, as well as like content creation. I have a couple clients that I create, like I have packages of content creation for like the month, like for motivational Monday quotes or things like that.
Cool.
But they're the only ones I do like weekly, daily, almost content creation. And so for them being like creative, it's been fun to just kind of be part of behind the scenes of a podcast and a podcast that's growing and has a very large audience. It's been really fun, and it made me want to get more into the podcast industry. And one of my things I'm doing right now for a new client is I don't have this advertised because I'm kind of learning with this one client I'm doing it for, but I'm doing podcast production for them. So I'm doing like their editing, their audio, and created like sound clips for them and things like that. Which again, isn't really designed, but it's more just for fun. And it was
something creative.
Yeah. And it was like a friend that needed help doing it. And so I was like, I'll help. I'd love to help. And so it's been fun and like figuring out, you know, how to upload and kind of, you know, the RSS feed and all that kind of stuff. It's been fun to like learn. Yeah, it made me kind of more interested in podcasts in general. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm still learning all of that.
It's a crazy world.
We're so in Adobe, and that's our world. And then it's what's an RSS feed and everything. Yeah. But
yeah, no. So true. It's fun to learn. I love learning new things. And something else I'm playing around with learning is UI design. Mm-hmm. So I always thought that was one of those things that was always kind of like, I always thought it required a lot more coding than I had knowledge of, because my coding abilities are not, you know, super, super high level, but you know, enough that I can, you know, find the line that I'm looking for on a Squarespace site and edit it. But I think that's something fun to like learn, because it is design. That's a lot more design than the podcast, you know, venture.
Yeah, I actually did like the 2 free months of Skillshare, so I was learning. It just helped me jump into podcasting, because I was like, I don't know what any of this terminology means. I just need someone to tell me.
Yeah, tell me.
Perfect. I don't have to pay for that yet. I have a reminder to cancel the subscription or to continue it. Skillshare, that's a great source. And then YouTube, Google.
Skillshare is awesome. I used it a little while. I used it in college. The library that was in my college town, if you were a member, you got Skillshare for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
See if it's connected to your library, because I think I don't know if it's that way anymore, but see if your libraries have so many resources. That's one of those things that like it was just showing up and going to the library and like going and asking like, hi, like what can I get with my library card at this library? Because I was going just for books, because I hated wasting money on buying books. So I joined the public library, and I was amazed by how many resources, like how many different things they had that are free for you to use. And so yeah, definitely big tip, go and ask your library what they have. Yeah.
I definitely
will. New York's public library is insane. Like there's so many things you can get.
Oh my God. I was stalking your Instagram and I saw like from when you were in the city and you like, I think you were working at the public library or.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I love work in the public library.
It's amazing.
The best. I've started doing, I don't time batch like fully at all, but I started time batching calls a little bit better. So I don't just have random calls like every day. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I have like a 10 and a noon and a, you know, and a 3 PM. So I've done it more in a capacity of like, you know, I have calls on Tuesdays and Thursdays or whatever, you know, right now it's a little different because I'm home, but, and because I'd love to go, I love working in the library, but I can't like take a call or like leave my stuff and go outside and take a call or anything like that. So, and it's really loud outside the library, because it's Bryant Park. So, I love working there on days that I don't have calls.
So I also wanted to talk to you about Golden Hour Guild. Just anything you'd like to share about it, anything and everything, your motivation, your goals with it, what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was starting my business, neither of my parents are like entrepreneurs or hadn't really started a business before. When starting my business, I kind of had to figure out like, you know, the starting an LLC and taxes and all that kind of stuff on my own.
I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah. So I also just like figuring out kind of like, you know, strategy and what to price things and like, you know, just kind of overall just starting a business and having questions. And all I had was really Google, and my parents are, you know, very supportive, but they didn't have like necessarily like, or if my friends, you know, were going into their first jobs in college, and I didn't really have a network of support for that type of thing of starting a business. So I started Golden Hour Guild kind of as a community. And why I called it Golden Hour Guild was I defined Golden Hour as your like first, when you're first starting a business, it's kind of the most important part, because most businesses unfortunately do not work, you know, fail. And so, you know, your Golden Hour is a time when you have to learn and kind of solidify your, you know, offerings and figure out your workflow and things like that. And so I wanted to be a place of community and connection and things like that for people to get answers to questions they had and to, you know, figure out, you know, just have a community. That's kind of the main thing. Yeah. So we have a Facebook page that's, you know, open to anyone to join. That's the community aspect. And then we have a creativity aspect, which I created as a lot of people, you know, come to me and ask like, where should I start with design? And I never know where to like direct them. So with Golden Hour Guild, these are just like creativity challenges to start building up your portfolio, or even if you don't want to publicly put it anywhere, just for people to like test out the design waters on their own.
Yeah. Just constantly create.
Yeah. So they're just meant to be like hour long. They're not meant to take you long. They're not meant to be like a full branding suite. It's just meant to be like little creative challenges that I post weekly. So there's the creativity, the community, and then connection, which is a piece I'm actually working on currently, which is like a mentor network. So it would be for people to, if they're looking for a web designer, or if they're looking for an accountant, or if they're looking for a business strategist, or if they're looking for, and it's not meant just for designers. It's meant for like really any creatives or anything like that. So where you're going to have people that like, can help you with like setting up a deck for your, like if you want to pitch to, get capital or things like that. So it's going to be like an open mentorship network on the website. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes for that, but that is coming soon.
I'm definitely going to join the Facebook group, and I'm going to be using that fun. Because I'm like, Mom, what do I do? Like, do I have... She's like, I don't know. I mean, I never was an entrepreneur. I was like, well, I know that, but do you know, like, am I going to have to be like self-employed on taxes? Then are my taxes going to go up because I'm like 21, I'm going to be graduating at 22. And they're like, oh, this 22-year-old with her frivolous money or whatever. And I'm like, I'm just trying not to go bankrupt.
I know. I think it's also hard as females to like, I think there's a missing link with us being empowered about making money and doing stuff with our money. So it's also like to help with that, but the Facebook group is great because there are it's very small, but it's, you know, and there's not, you know, people don't post. It's not one of those Facebook groups that's like people post all the time. It's like pretty, you know, irregular posting. But when someone does post, everyone goes on and comments like, oh, like forceful. I would charge hourly for this, or I would charge, you know, like, you know, people ask like, how much should I charge for this? Or how should I go about changing my name? Or how should I, you know, different things like that. And yeah, it's just, it's all like, you know, the kind of the little things that you like ponder about when you're starting a business. But again, with what you said about, I think the biggest thing I ever did was hire an accountant. It was the best thing I've ever done.
I think I'm going to be doing that.
But yeah, it was definitely worth it, especially every state has just such different and wild rules. And like in New York City, there's this crazy rule that when you form your LLC, you have to post about it in like a newspaper. That's like a state rule. Yeah, it's a state rule. I know. Yeah, it's a state rule.
Like a physical printed newspaper.
Physical printed newspaper. And so like every state has some wild, like weird, wild rules. So I think definitely having a professional in that capacity is really helpful.
Yeah, like a financial advisor or something of that sort. Yeah,
exactly. Wow. So I know.
It's just crazy. Wild. Then I wanted to, I guess, delve into some more deeper questions. I couldn't think of a word besides deeper because some may view this as something that, you know, they think about a lot. And as designers, we're very much in our head because we're always working in comparison and everything. So I know many don't take that leap to freelance, like you said, to actually go through all those steps to become an actual LLC. That's where the name of this podcast came from. It's like daring to design, daring to do whatever, either.
I love that, by the way. I love that name.
Oh, thank you. So like I said, really daring to design, either for financial reasons or personal reasons. Did you experience this? I guess you mentioned earlier, like the imposter syndrome of design.
Yeah, I think if someone says they never experienced them, they're not telling the truth. Cause I think, and it doesn't even matter if you're doing design or anything. I think everyone experiences it, even on like a corporate, if they're working a corporate job.
Yeah.
I think that when you graduate college, we think that we have all the knowledge to do things, and it soon takes you not very long to realize that college teaches you a lot of things, but there's a lot of things that you have to really figure out on your own. And like, for example, like how to, you know, how renting an apartment works, and like the, you know, that you need 40% of your income to like is your rent, and like, just like little things like that kind of, and like taxes, and you don't, there should be a class in college. It's like,
yeah, you don't,
it's called like real life. And it teaches you all the like basic, like how to balance your checkbook and like how to do things like that and how to stick to a budget. And, I think that, not only like you find imposter syndrome in like my business itself, but just kind of post-grad out of college life, is, you know, there's a lot of Bambi moments for you how not to figure it out. But no, I think, and also with my business, I think any point where I want to grow it, or when I added Gold Network Guild, I was like, do I have enough knowledge, or like do I have the ability to like help people? And I had to have had so many people DM me being, or even like, you know, when they join the Gold Network Guild, they have to answer questions that are just like, thank you so much for creating this group, like, or any kind of, you know, I do like blog posts on my website, and I have people that DM me and are like, this helped me so much, or this free download like was really helpful, or, you know, just different things like that, that things that I necessarily were really, you know, not self-conscious about, but the important, you know, thinking like, oh, is this, and like, will people actually enjoy this or use this? And, you know, I've gotten, for the most part, I get, you know, feedback that, you know, validates my concerns. But yeah, I think like even like when I was adding to like my shop, I was like, are people gonna buy, you know, do these things people want? And you know, I continually prove myself wrong, so I think that's the good part. But I think with imposter syndrome, a big part of it is telling yourself it's okay to feel that way, because that's normal, but also just talking to yourself, especially when you are working for yourself, there's no raises or there's no promotions or there's no, you know, quarterly meeting being like, okay, here's where you're doing great, here's where you're not doing so great. And I think working for yourself, figuring out a system of checking in with yourself and figuring out kind of, you know, when you need you know, to ask for outside help on things. And for me, it's like I set, when I say goals, I kind of hate the word goals because it kind of like reflects to like New Year's resolution type of things. But I'm talking about just like kind of setting like quotas for yourself within your business has really helped me, you know, with tracking my growth as a, as my, you know, own person, but also tracking my growth within my business, which has really helped kind of overcome the imposter syndrome type of feeling.
You know, we're always our own worst critics and everything of that sort with comparison from social media, or like you graduate with someone, you're like, oh, well, look at what they're doing. It's like, that doesn't mean that you can't do it. Like I had this, that same feeling with this podcast. I was like, I'm just a student. I guess that's the whole point. Is that
that's all
student trying to help others.
Yeah.
So I definitely
hear doing it and starting it. Like there's so many people that's, you know, again, we kind of talk about like that have the, it's that you are doing it and actually like living it. So I think that that's a big part of it.
Thank you. Yeah. I had the idea for this podcast and then 2 hours later I made a graphic and I posted it and I'm like, all right, well,
I should
go order a mic. Like, I guess this is really happening. And I guess I should, you know, reach out to people and be like, I hope I actually get a guest. So,
oh no, I love it. Yeah.
I think also Golden Hour Guild is going to be a huge resource for listeners of this podcast because we're all in the same boat, just trying to make it through.
Figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So why instead of like,
I'll figure it out.
Right. And then everyone is always talking about comparison, but like instead of knocking each other down, we should all just work together and build each other up because then we're all going to benefit.
There truly, I think there, everyone always asks, like, do you think that I think there's, if it proves anything, how many graphic designers there are. And also, as you said, there's a lot of different routes you can go with design. There's space for everyone. So I think that just by helping each other out and like, you know, being our own coworkers.
I think definitely whenever I graduate, wherever I end up, a co-working space, like what you said when you join, would be great because then you're constantly meeting people and networking. And then you may even meet someone who can be like a future business partner, or like they know numbers and I know design. It's just.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're coming to the end of this podcast. I'm going to end off on advice. So you kind of just mentioned about how there's so many designers. What advice will you give to other designers thinking about freelancing? Is the market too saturated?
Yeah. So I really think there is room for everyone. And I think kind of, I created a pretty, you know, big umbrella for myself of what I do, but there's also very specific niches that you can find. And if you do, you know, do something very well, I think that there's also power in doing a very specific, you know, type of design, or, you know, food, you know, if you just do like food illustration, you know, something, you know, there are people looking for those type of things. But I also think that if you're first starting, you know, freelancing, I always, if people DM me or ask me this, I always say the same thing because it's how I started. And I think it is a really great way to prove to yourself that you can do it. And also like allow yourself grace and room to grow, is starting local and with people, you know, and not necessarily like people, you know, as in like, you know, if you have to start out by not being paid, like if you're really, really starting out, like, no, this is if you're like, you know, teaching yourself or something, you have to start out paid. But if you are like a student, you should be paid because you have, you know, some skills and things like that. But I'm talking about like just starting with people, you know, like hiring you. I think that those kind of people and those kind of relationships can help you just kind of allow room for that imposter syndrome and allow room for yourself to, you know, teach yourself things that you might need to teach yourself. And it might not necessarily even be a skill if you went to school for design. It could just be like your process of working with a client, or your process of working through a project, or your, how many projects you can take on at a time, or things like that. You know, everyone has something that they need to work on. And so I think that, starting like locally and small, and not even if it's a big, big local company, that's awesome. But working like with someone that you can meet face to face versus like starting your first client being virtual, and also people that you know, because they will allow you to be more comfortable. And I think that really helps.
Yeah. One of my most recent clients was my friend's boyfriend's sister.
Yeah.
She does like cosmetology and putting on lash extensions and everything. So she was like, can you help me with the logo? And now we're talking about, you know, hopefully once Corona, you know, dies down and she can start opening and continuing her services, that I would help her with like a Squarespace website. And then it's through a friend. So I don't feel like I need to be this like super professional. Like I know what I'm doing. Like I'm going to admit that this is going to be my first web design venture. And she's like, don't worry about it. Like, I don't know what I'm doing either. I'm like, all right, cool. So I think that's great.
And with that type of client, she'll be perfect because she's going to have people coming into her studio all the time and people might be like, oh, I love your logo. Where did you get that logo from?
Exactly. And
word of mouth is like the biggest most powerful client, you know, that's where all my clients generate from now is word of mouth. And, I heard the worst is when someone says that someone referred me and I don't know who the person is. And I look back and I'm like, they aren't a client. I don't know who this person is, but happy to have you.
It could have been a follower on Instagram. Yeah, saw her post today. She would be
great. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is the final question of this episode. And if you could tell yourself from 3 years ago, a single piece of advice, what would it be?
To stop being a biomedical engineering major earlier on. And that it all works out truly. I think that, you know, I'm a year post-grad, not a couple. And I think that a year and a half. And I think that, you know, even being surrounded in my coworking space, I think is a big part of it, is being surrounded by women that are of all different ages. And seeing, you know, 45-year-old women on their third career shift and like they're creating this new passion project. I think that, you know, it isn't a one way, you know, direction to success. I think that, you know, you kind of have to find it on your own and it's all turns and twists and things like that. And I think that, I think that it all works out in the end. And I think that as long as you're happy doing what you're doing, I think that's the most important part. And I know for me, I will continue doing, and I absolutely love what I do right now, and I will continue doing it as long as I love it. But if one day I wake up and I'm like, God, I really hate doing branding suites, I will pivot and figure out a new business or a new venture or, you know, create something new. So I think that just kind of finding your own measure of success is very important. But I told my 3 years ago self that I would be very proud of myself today.
I think that's a perfect way to end off this episode. If you want to plug yourself now, all your socials, website, where listeners can find you, especially the Golden Hour Guild. I'm also going to have all the information in the description of this podcast. And
Well, you can find my creative account at esm.creative. Golden Hour Guild is just at Golden Hour Guild. And my website and my personal are Emma McGoldrick. My Instagram's Emma McGoldrick 24 because Emma McGoldrick was taken. But that's where you can find me and reach out with any questions. And I hope you all join Golden Arrow Guild and we can create even a bigger, better community.
All right. So thank you so much, Emma, for coming on this podcast.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was so great and such an honor.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to follow the Dare to Design Instagram account for more content. It's at daretodesign.podcast. The link will also be in the description of this episode. All right, again, thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and I'll talk to you later.